Hello again, and welcome to the Slow Flowers Podcast with Deborah Prinzing, episode 122. This is the podcast about American flowers and the people who grow and design with them. It's all about making a conscious choice, and I invite you to join the conversation and the creative community. On today's podcast, I welcome you to a new year, 2014. I predict that this is the year when saving our flowers will become a major theme in the floral industry, as the American-grown flower movement expands and captures the attention of many who have been complacent or disengaged from the issues relating to the origin of their flowers. That doesn't just mean consumers. No, it actually has to begin with those who buy and sell flowers as a business, wholesalers especially, followed by florists and retailers. Where is the leadership to step up and do the right thing, to not be motivated by profits alone, but to consider the triple bottom line, people, profits, and the planet? In 2014, I will launch slowflowers.com, a free online resource for consumers to easily find American-grown flowers from florists, retailers, studio designers, and farm direct sources. And while I've spent the past 6 months working closely with software developers and a talented design team to create this valuable new flower directory, I've tried to honestly answer the question, why Slow Flowers? Today's podcast discusses my personal thoughts on what Slow Flowers means to me and why the concept is critically important to the American floral industry. I'm sure you haven't missed the slow food movement and the growing popularity of farm-to-table cuisine, even if you're not a passionate foodie. Food is important, right? Many of us care about preserving farmland and stimulating economic development in rural areas, not to mention keeping jobs at home. We celebrate the rockstar chef who has crafted an enticing narrative about her or his menu and the heirloom artisanal or forage food and beverages that we are served, all local, of course. But what about flowers? They are certainly a part of agriculture, accounting for more than $4.13 billion in annual revenue, according to the USDA. Somehow, though, over the past several decades, flowers have fallen through the cracks. The style savvy might consider a vase of blooms to be the finishing touch for dining tables or the perfect accent to one's fireplace mantle. But even the most eco-conscious consumer doesn't think about where the flowers that he or she has were grown or who grew them. A recent study commissioned by the California Cut Flower Commission magnifies this lack of awareness. When asked, "Do you know where your flowers come from?" Nearly three quarters, or 74%, of consumers in a nationwide survey said no. Yet, ironically, at the same time, according to Vancouver, BC-based Conscientious Innovation, a market research firm headed by sustainability maven Kirsten DeWest, 65% of North American consumers feel that buying local and supporting locally based business is an important sustainability issue, surpassing the importance of both global warming and buying organic. So country of origin labeling is not required on flowers as it is on the fruits and vegetables we buy. The same people who ask, "Is that salmon wild-caught or farmed at the restaurant?" or "Is this a New Zealand Pinot or an Oregon Pinot?" aren't aware of the origins or the seasonality of the stems, buds, branches, and other botanicals that celebrate, woo, and adorn our lives. Somehow we become disconnected from the fact that flowers grow in soil, on land all around us. A few years back, a flower farmer friend and I were appalled to see deceptive labeling on mixed bouquets sold at one of our natural grocery store chains here in the Northwest. The stickers read, "Locally hand-tied in the Pacific Northwest." As if you can put a twisty tie around a bunch of imported chrysanthemums and roses in some local warehouse and call that bouquet local. We complained about this greenwashing practice, and the retailer finally removed the misguided stickers. But I wonder if it really mattered. The store continues to sell those non-local bouquets while waving the local, seasonal, and organic banners throughout their parking lot. Questionable labeling also takes place at the big box retailers, where you can find bouquets with round stickers that read, "Mixed bouquet, carefully hand-tied for you in insert city." Hand-tied does not mean the flowers are locally grown, or even North American grown for that matter. They could be, but without proper labeling, who really knows? Why should you care about flowers? After all, we don't eat them, right? But here are some hard facts. In terms of domestic flower production, Washington, where I live, is the nation's second in volume of flowers. Oregon is the fourth in terms of volume grown. Thanks to its benign 12-month growing climate, California is number one in flower production. Add up all the cut flower farming in the U.S., and sadly, it only accounts for 20% of all flowers sold here. That's right, 80% of the flowers we buy are imported. Why is this? The situation we're in is directly linked to the 1991 Andean Trade Preference Agreement, which was enacted as part of our so-called war on drugs. A few South American countries were given tariff-free preferences to incentivize their shift from producing drugs to growing roses. And in just over 30 years since, we've watched near-tragic results. America's cottage industry of family-owned flower farms began to disappear. The American rose was all but lost to Ecuador and Colombia. During today's Pasadena Rose Parade, only one of 45 floats is decorated with all California-grown flowers, including California's roses. But you can be sure that the 4 million television viewers worldwide were left with the impression that those roses were from farms in California. When Valentine's Day rolls around next month, only 3% of roses given to sweethearts will be American-grown. Carnations used to be the quintessential flower, especially from florists. Not too long ago, there were 100 carnation farms in Colorado. Today, there is only one carnation grower left in the entire U.S., a third-generation Japanese-American family in the Bay Area. Imported flowers benefit from low-cost labor, less stringent environmental regulations, and a very strong international lobby. For example, when trade negotiations take place in Washington, D.C., flower exporting countries send in their nation's president, for goodness sakes, while American flower growers have lowly trade associations to advocate for them. Who do you think Congress is going to pay attention to? In addition to bad trade policy, I also blame complacent American consumers for the skewed floral equation. We're all guilty of that "I want what I want when I want it" mindset. It's sort of an American thing. Of course, the floral design industry and its flower clients contribute to the problem. When a popular wedding magazine splashes a bouquet of peonies on its cover, you can be certain that brides take that image to their florist and say, "I want peonies." No matter that the nuptials are scheduled for November or March, months when peonies do not actually grow here. Since peonies are probably growing somewhere on the globe, it's simply a matter of importing them to satisfy that demand, despite the $30 per stem price. Happily, I see glimmers of change in this mindset. There are some inspiring, eco-conscious floral designers who are trying to change the conversation. We've profiled many of them here on the Slow Flowers podcast. Rather than fearing what will happen if they say no to a bride's or groom's request for an out-of-season flower, these progressive florists suggest alternatives, beautiful local and seasonal flowers that reflect the dream wedding's aesthetic and color palette. In doing so, these creative designers are educating customers about a better way to celebrate marriage, while also doing good for local farms, for the environment, and the local economy. Some floral designers even say to the couple, "If you really want to carry peonies down the aisle, schedule your wedding when those flowers are at peak, in May or early June." Flowers are a perishable good. Some would say they are a luxury. I don't believe that's true, and there are social scientists who have documented the mental health benefits of having flowers in our homes, so I'm not the only one who's pro-flowers. But if you consider that flowers are perhaps less essential to our daily lives than, say, food, I argue that it's all the more important reason to use them responsibly with little or no carbon footprint. Shipping a perishable product here on jumbo jets from another continent simply makes no sense. There is a carbon footprint to almost everything we Americans consume, but we also desire to live sustainable lifestyles. There is a simple solution when it comes to flowers. Think of it like the pebble in the pond. The first ring is your own backyard. Gardeners are better equipped than most people to grasp this notion. I call it the slow flowers attitude, like harvesting the salad greens and herbs from your window box or kitchen garden before running to the supermarket. Begin decorating your home with flowers, foliage, and branches that you grow yourself. It's a way to practice the art of living in the moment and observing nature's transition from one season to the next. Beyond your backyard, seek out flower sources such as farmers markets and you pick fields. If you ask a florist to source local flowers, he or she will have more incentive to push the wholesale industry toward better country and state of origin labeling. And if you can't find seasonal flowers in your own community, consider other domestic year-round sources, such as California or Florida. And think about this. Flowers are part of the agricultural fabric of where we live. Allow the fleeting, ephemeral character of flowers, their fragrance, and the way they connect us to time, place, and the senses to inspire your own practices. Your own relationship with flowers may change. There is a truly powerful language of flowers. May you learn it. Thank you for joining me in this episode of the Slow Flowers Podcast with Deborah Prinzing. Please visit my website, deborahprinzing.com, to see more details about Slow Flowers and its upcoming launch. And the good news is that listeners have downloaded more than 4,500 episodes of the Slow Flowers Podcast since I launched it in July of 2013. I thank you for taking the time to join my conversations with flower farmers, florists, and other notable floral experts. If you like what you hear, please consider logging onto iTunes and posting a listener review. Until next week, please join me in putting more American-grown flowers on the table, one vase at a time. The Slow Flowers Podcast is engineered and edited by Hannah Holkertz. Learn more about her work at hhcreates.net.